Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spangin. On today's show...
There may be trouble ahead.
Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and US President Joe Biden have met for the first time since assuming their respective roles. The meeting, originally planned for Thursday, was postponed for 24 hours as the president cleared his schedule to address events in Afghanistan. The delay also forced the Prime Minister to postpone his return to Israel until after the end of the Shabbat in Washington. Joining us today to discuss the meeting, what it means for bilateral relations, and what it means for Israel on other fronts, I'm joined by Amir Tibon and Anshul Pfeffer. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Simon. Good to be here.
How did the meeting go then? It looked a little like Biden nodded off for a while when Bennett was speaking, or was that just a bad camera angle?
I kind of think that Joe Biden has a lot on his plate right now. You know, if he kind of took a 10-second wink, he can be excused, and we don't have to blame Naftali Bennett for boring him to sleep. And I think in general it went quite well. It probably went as well as expected. Amir slightly disagrees with me on this point, and he'll say so in a moment. I don't think it was a very important meeting as presidential prime ministerial meetings go. And the Israeli prime minister, you know, goes to the White House on an average once a year, and these meetings are not rare, and they have obviously an importance. But I think that specifically in this meeting, a lot of the groundwork was already done in advance, done quite well actually by, from what I've heard so far, done quite well by Bennett's rather green and inexperienced team. They seem to have done quite a good job of preparing, along with slightly more experienced team working for Joe Biden. And the areas of agreement and disagreement are pretty well defined in advance. I don't think anyone had any expectation that Naftali Bennett was going to change Joe Biden's mind on rejoining the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear agreement. And I don't think anybody thought that Biden was going to try very hard and convince Naftali Bennett that the two-state solution is the right thing to do and he should go ahead and express his support for forming a Palestinian state. I think it was quite clear on what they agree and what they disagree, and they accentuated and emphasized their agreements. It was their first real meeting, and I think they seemed to have a decent, positive rapport. And I think at the end of the day, the most important thing about this meeting was that it actually took place, that Joe Biden found, at the height of the greatest crisis that he's facing in the first year of his presidency, 90 minutes in which to meet Bennett on his own, to face the media with the statements, and then the joint meeting of the teams. I think that shows not so much how Naftali Bennett is important to Joe Biden, but how much Biden is a supporter of Israel, and how much it was important for him to have this meeting with the new prime minister. They didn't mention a name who they're very happy of a person who they both were very happy was not there in the room, but that was also, I think, part of it. But beyond that, this will not go down as, I think, as one of the great meetings between the leaders of Israel and the United States. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. These meetings are about maintenance before about being about big decisions.
Do we think that Bennett and his green team scrambled slightly to alter the tone or the content of what he had to say to Biden in light of events in Afghanistan?
I think they realized that they're meeting him at a very difficult time. And this is a change, because before the events of the past week, it actually looked like he was on a roll by then. He passed the infrastructure vote in the Senate. He was able to get more and more Americans vaccinated for COVID-19. The economy is roaring. The jobs report was good. And then this week, and for Bennett, that was obviously, bad circumstances. He's facing this huge crisis. And I think Bennett handled it well. He offered Israel's support. Not that it means too much. I mean, Israel is not going to send the Air Force to Kabul now. But he looked like he's sympathetic to the situation. And even the statement that his staff put out on Thursday, which was kind of meaningless, when they said, we will give the president and the White House all the space they need in terms of rescheduling the visit and the meeting. Of course, the White House was going to do whatever they were going to do anyway. Nobody's asking the Israeli side, but I think it was a polite gesture. And eventually, this meeting also served President Biden a little bit, in the sense that a day after this tragedy, inside this terrible crisis, he is meeting the leader of one of the most popular countries among the American public, Israel, and seeming in control of the situation and continuing his day-to-day responsibilities. So for both of these leaders, there was some value politically to this meeting, even if we accept Anshel's overall theme that it was not the most important meeting between an Israeli prime minister and an American president in the history of the relationship.
Did the ghost of prime minister's past hover over this meeting?
And presidents, I have to say. And presidents.
Although Obama got a shout out by name.
Yes, exactly after the part where Biden supposedly slipped. Actually, we have a story on the website by Ellison Kaplan Sommer about this exact media manipulation, because you can see that exactly when he's supposed to be nodding off, he wakes suddenly and says that Bennett also needs to give credit to President Obama. But yes, I think Trump and Netanyahu were absolutely in the background for this entire meeting. I think Biden is very happy that he's not working with Netanyahu. He's met over the years, I think, 9 or 10 Israeli prime ministers.
With Bennett now, it's 10.
Yeah, Bennett is
from Golda Meir to Naftali Bennett. So with the exception of Israel's first three prime ministers, Biden has met 10.
Yeah, that's nobody in American politics can compete with that number today.
I doubt anybody else in the world has met 10 Israeli prime ministers.
Yeah, probably. Mm. So I think he's happy that now it's Bennett and not Netanyahu. And I think for Bennett, it's also easier to work with Biden than with President Trump if he had won re-election. Trump was very supportive of Netanyahu personally, intervened in Israeli politics at a level that I don't think previous American presidents had done. All the presidents intervened to some degree. Clinton worked against Netanyahu and Obama, but the way that Trump worked for Netanyahu, I think, was unprecedented. And maybe if he was still in power, the whole Bennett coalition maybe wouldn't even come into fruition. So I think they were also relieved to have one another and not their predecessors.
Mm. I think that the ghost of Barack Obama was there in a way as well, because back in 2010, when Netanyahu came, then newly elected Netanyahu, who had been out of office for a decade, came for his first meeting as prime minister with the then also newly elected Barack Obama. They had met once before when Obama was a presidential candidate doing his rounds around the world, and he'd stopped in Jerusalem, and then Netanyahu was still leader of the opposition. But this was their second meeting and their first meeting as by then elected leaders. And Netanyahu had arrived prepared to, you know, to talk about Iran and to give the whole spiel about how, you know, how the U.S. has to support Israel on that and has to be making sure that Iran won't get nuclear weapons. And that was behind closed doors, but that very quickly leaked out. That was a very traumatic conversation in which basically Obama very quickly dismissed whatever Netanyahu had to say about Iran. We'll take care of that. And then he said, let's talk about the Palestinians. Mm. And he spent the next half an hour telling him, you have to stop building settlements. And that was also when he made the not one brick comment. And it was the only time that an Israeli prime minister has ever been forced to stop building settlements for any specific period of time, publicly acknowledging that it was not building. It was for I think 10 or 11 months. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it was a 10-month moratorium.
Yeah, and that was a very traumatic meeting for Netanyahu. And even though Bennett, I don't think he really expected something like that to happen, it's the kind of thing that Biden may have sort of sprung on Bennett. And I think that fear was at the back of their minds. Maybe Biden will suddenly decide to push on that. Mm. There was a relief there. Biden is not focused on the Palestinian issue. We saw it also in the public comments where he mumbled something at the end about the Palestinians. It was very, very brief. And I think that for Bennett, even though that was the expectation, it was important to confirm that this president and his administration will not be pushing on the Palestinian issue, at least in the next year or so, at least until COVID and climate in China are on more stable tracks for the administration.
When I listen to Angela, I also get nostalgic for another important event in that relationship, which is the, I think, May 2011 meeting, when Netanyahu is sitting there in the Oval Office next to Obama, and in front of the cameras of the entire world began preaching to him, basically begins to tell him, these are Israel's historic borders, and this is what happened in 1967, and quizzing him on Israeli geography. And this was an event that, for Obama's staff, I think was the moment that Netanyahu became not just a world leader we don't like, but really kind of persona non grata for many of them. This public lecture in Obama's a home and in the most powerful place in Washington, D.C. And Bennett also avoided, I think, any kind of behavior that could even remind someone of that. I think very respectful of Biden. So this is a totally different relationship, and we'll see over time if they can keep it that way.
So nobody was left asking this time, who's the fucking superpower?
No, and it's interesting also, and here's a fun statistic. Bennett is 49, Biden is 78. So there's a 29-year gap in Biden's favor. This is there was only one meeting between an Israeli prime minister and a U.S. president where the age gap was wider.
Answers on a postcard, listener.
Well, I already asked my Twitter followership about this, and quite a few of them got it. The only time the age gap was larger was May 1961, Ben-Gurion and JFK. There it was 30 years wide, and Ben-Gurion was the elder. And it's interesting to compare these two meetings, because that was... If anybody ever writes a study or a book about all the meetings between Israeli prime ministers and U.S. presidents, that was probably the most important of them all. That was the meeting where they discussed, America had already discovered that Israel was building a textile plant near Dimona, but something else. And this, we know now from many years after when the records came out of the forensic detail with which Kennedy quizzed Ben-Gurion about what are they doing? What are you building in Dimona? And various assurances. Some of that meeting, from what we know from different sources, has never been publicized. And there are some agreements there. And after in subsequent meetings with many, when Shimon Peres, who was then a young man, also got to meet the president and to come up with the famous formulation, Israel will never introduce, that weird word, introduce nuclear weapons. But that was sort of the basis of the quiet agreement between Israel and the US about Israel's nuclear capabilities. That was also the meeting where the first arms deal between the US, because people think the US has always been Israel's ally. No, until the early 1960s, Israel did not receive or buy any weapons from the US. The first weapons deal was for Hawk anti-aircraft missiles in the early 60s. That was agreed upon also in that meeting. So that was probably the most important meeting, with that massive age gap. There it was Kennedy, who also had this sort of a past because of his father. Everybody knew his father was an anti-Semite, Joe Kennedy, the ambassador to the UK at some point at the beginning of the war. He was a Nazi sympathizer. And JFK had come to Israel already as a congressman and had wanted to show his pro-Israel credentials and so on. That was a very different meeting. That was a really important meeting. This meeting, with the same kind of age gap, it was like I said, is much, much more about maintenance, though a nuclear capability was on this time Iran's nuclear capability and arms deals as well.
And there was a promise on a nuclear capability. We'll see what it actually means. But there was a promise by Biden that I think gave Israel a little more than it had received from him earlier. Because earlier he had said that on his watch, Iran will not become a nuclear country, although some people will say it already is, getting at least close to the threshold capability. And that happened on his predecessor's watch. But this time I think he was a bit more forceful, and he said Iran will never have the nuclear weapons capability. And I agree that overall you cannot compare this meeting to Ben-Gurion JFK meeting and probably to some other important ones. But if Biden stands by his word on this one, it could have some implications.
Any doubt?
Well, I think that the previous statement left a crack that some people in Israel were beginning to get worried about. What does it mean on my watch?
I think that also Biden, who said at this meeting now, he said that if diplomacy fails, there are other options. That's basically his version of Obama's all options are on the table.
That one we've heard before. That sounded a bit familiar, the other options on the table.
Well, I mean, I've seen all kinds of analyses of both of that, those, you know, ready to turn to other options and Iran will not have a nuclear weapon. Interpreting it as being harder on Iran, softer on Iran, leaving door open. Maybe other options might be a warning to Israel. There are other options before you take unilateral action, right? Is that not one way of interpreting that statement?
Definitely. Don't rush Israel. Don't jump the gun because, you know, we are looking at other... And of course, I think one of the... If you read Anshul's great biography of Netanyahu, one of the places where you did see Netanyahu have an impact was on the Obama sanctions against Iran at the time, basically causing the Americans to fear so much of the option of a disastrous Israeli strike that they said, okay, let's take this a step further with the economic pressure. But now we're in a different situation because the maximum pressure strategy of Trump and Netanyahu, and I think Netanyahu had a larger role in that strategy than publicly seen, it didn't bring the results everybody thought it would. It basically pushed Iran to the brink and they kept going. So now Biden is dealing with a much more difficult situation.
Before the meeting, we were told that Bennett was going to unveil Israel's new strategy for dealing with Iran. What happened with that?
Well, there was some briefing about Bennett going... You know, preparing to present to the president some new approach towards Iran. Strangely, we haven't heard anything about that since. So we can only assume that perhaps in the previous meetings that Bennett had with Austin, the Secretary of Defense, and with Secretary of State Blinken, maybe he tried to present it, and either they said, "Okay, well, yeah, we'll think about it," or they said, "Well,
it was a trial balloon that was quickly."
Or maybe even just something for internal consumption. This is mostly, I think, about something. You know, something. So, you I mean, to, we haven't the spoke, Israeli public.
We haven't spoken so far about how this meeting played here back at home here in Israel. But as Amir says, you know, a lot of these things were for Israeli ears, not really for POTUS or for any other American
and perhaps senior official. On the flip side, the report that Bennett promised that Biden that he wouldn't campaign against any return to the Iranian nuclear deal is for overseas consumption.
I think that one is a promise that you can present as a gesture from Bennett, but you can also just present it as a sane and reasonable thing to do that serves Israel's interests. Because the last thing this prime minister needs right now is an open confrontation with the United States president. And Biden is not Obama, let's remember. Obama was not so popular here in Israel by the time that Netanyahu began to openly clash with him. Whereas Biden, I think right now, is a pretty popular president in the Israeli public opinion. People don't have a bad opinion of him. I think if you just walk around the streets here and ask people about Biden, he's not seen as hostile or problematic. Maybe he's not seen like Trump was supposedly, you know, I think Anshul and I would disagree, but supposedly such a great friend, etc. But people don't view Biden as, you know, a president that doesn't have Israel's side. So going into a confrontation with him right now publicly would, first of all, not be a very smart political move, and also could maybe hurt Bennett's fragile coalition, where you have several parties that attacked Netanyahu over the years for ruining the relationship with the United States, getting us into trouble with the Democrats, fighting unnecessarily with Obama. What would those party leaders do now if Bennett adopted a similar strategy against Biden? I think it's smarter for him to say, if we have disagreements, we'll discuss them inside the room, we'll present them in a respectful and a honorable way, and we're not going to get into a political fight that, of course, would be very pleasing to Republicans in Washington, D.C., but not really serve Israel's interests where it matters.
I think we're also seeing here the Bennett government, and also we have to mention this at this point that a large part of the foreign policy is being run by Yair Lapid, foreign minister and alternate prime minister, though he's for some reason taken that bit off his Twitter bio recently. They're laying the groundwork for a number of developments that we can expect to happen in the next few months that will be certainly be used by Netanyahu and the opposition to try and show them as being defeatists and as bending backwards towards the administration and so on. two things that we can expect. One thing is that the U.S. at some point will reopen the consulate in Jerusalem, which serves its dialogue with the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a consulate which has existed ever since 1967. There's no reason for it not to exist now, but Trump, or more accurately, David Friedman, Trump's ambassador and confidant here in Israel, shut that down a couple of years ago. That is something that will probably be reopened at some point. So, you know, Bennett, in his interview last week with the New York Times, said something about Jerusalem is Israel's capital, only Israel's capital. In other words, like, we're not happy with this being reopened, but Israel's not going to block it. So they're laying the groundwork, and they want to show Biden as being a very pro-Israel president. And therefore, if he does that, okay, we don't really like him, but it's not the end of the world, and it's not a tragedy for Israel. More importantly, at some point, the United States may rejoin the Iran deal. Right now, the main obstacle to that is actually the Iranians, but it could well happen at some point. And we're already seeing various people, not necessarily proxies for the government, but people who are putting forward a position that the Bennett government wants to be heard there, saying that what happened in May 2018 when Trump left and everything that's happened since has not been good for Israel's security. Iran has greatly increased its uranium stockpile. It's the distance between Iran becoming a threshold or a nuclear power has dramatically decreased. And all this is because Iran has not had to keep to the agreement because of the U.S. Withdrawing from it. And this hasn't helped Israel. And this move, which was into a large degree orchestrated by Netanyahu, has been bad for Israel's security. So we're seeing kind of this ongoing preparation of the Israeli public opinion for this happening. So, you know, it's not just that Bennett and Lapid have promised not to oppose this public. And it wasn't just in the meeting this week. In the very first conversations that they had, both Bennett with Biden and Lapid with Blinken, they've been saying that we're not going to make our differences on Iran into a public dispute with the administration. This is very much because of the Israeli public. They want to, they don't want a conflict with the administration, but they also want the Israeli public to blame Netanyahu and not to blame them for anything that happens now.
And maybe especially when there's a tourist visa waiver conversation going on.
We're going to have some reporting on that this week by Ben Samuels, our man in Washington, D.C. I wouldn't jump in joy just yet. This is going to be a complicated issue. And also on the consulate that Anshel mentioned, we had a great story by Ben and Jonathan Liss, our diplomatic correspondent, about why the administration, while it does want to open the consulate, is probably going to find a way to do it that is not so harmful politically to Bennett. Maybe, for example, wait until his government passes its budget in the Knesset and looks a little more stable and then do it. And another option that is being discussed is coupling it with some kind of gesture towards the Israeli side. So, for example, you reopen the consulate, which I completely agree with Angel's characterization. It's a non-event in the real world.
No, it's easy for Netanyahu.
Yeah, exactly.
And not just Netanyahu, for Nir Barkat, the former Jerusalem mayor, and the leading contender now to replace Netanyahu one day.
To make noise about
the Jerusalem
issue. So they will find a way maybe to couple it with some kind of gesture that will make it easier for the Israeli public to swallow and let Bennett navigate it in the right-wing minefields with less explosions.
I mean, I think we can agree from the meeting that there are two losers from the meeting. One is Netanyahu, who was sitting in a very comfortable resort on a very private, exclusive island in Hawaii, but he wasn't there. Mm. And I'm sure he would have preferred to be in the White House rather than be in Hawaii. And the Palestinians, who've been pushed, you know, 3 months ago.
Afterthought.
3 months ago, where we had in May, we had Gaza, we had East Jerusalem, everything. You know, the world seemed to be refocusing its attention on the Palestinians. And this was like, once again, there's no way that that Israel can get away with it. And all these like talks of doom and gloom and in the Israeli establishment that the world is finally going to come after us. It's been forgotten.
Mm. Even before the meeting with Biden, Bennett gave an interview in the New York Times, and he said, you know, Israel won't annex territory, obviously, but he also insisted that his government will not establish a Palestinian state. And presumably he told Biden the same thing.
For sure. And I don't think Biden was going to dictate anything very different than that, because the American administration is also frustrated with the Palestinian Authority right now. One of the first steps that this new Israeli government took after it was sworn in was to sign an agreement with the Palestinian Authority regarding COVID vaccines. Mm-hmm. If you remember this swap of vaccines was supposed to help the PA vaccinate, I think, 1.5 million people. And because of public pressure and posts on social media, the deal fell apart. And Israel, I think, later signed a deal with South Korea, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that was a very frustrating moment for the administration, because the administration itself and its allies in Congress had already come out praising this deal. And it was supposed to be an example of how, even without very concrete movement on the diplomatic front, you can still have achievements and dialogue, and there's a new government in Israel, and it has left-wing members within it, Meretz and Labor Party and some parts of Yesh Atid, and here we can work together. And when that fell apart, I think it was a wake-up call for the administration that you really should have the lowest possible expectations right now about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Even a vaccine deal is not something that's going to work. So I don't think Biden is going to waste his very precious time on pushing this to come forward. And I think the quote you mentioned from Bennett's interview, Simon, really reflects how sad the situation is. Because a few years ago, such a quote by the Israeli prime minister would have been seen as problematic in Washington. He says no two states and no annexation. People would have said, well, of course you're not going to annex the settlements. That's a given, yeah. But no to two states. And right now in 2021, it's the opposite. The big news is no annexation. That's off the table, because this was a real discussion just over a year ago under Trump. And the two states part, okay, you know, whatever. Nobody really cares about that anymore.
I didn't even mention the two states. Yeah. Not in the public remarks, but even according to the briefings given afterwards, he spoke about Sheikh Jarrah, you know, don't do any evictions, don't make any big settlement moves. He didn't mention the need, from what we've been told, from all the leaks and briefings, it hasn't been there.
When you say that, Angela, I realize that Bennett's media shop is very weak. Because if Netanyahu had a meeting with an American president, a Democrat, no less, and the two-state solution would not have been mentioned, you would have seen the entire Likud media machine thrust into action. Look at this historic achievement.
Is this weakness or is... Or are they saying, you know, we don't want to create a situation where the White House will have to come back and say, no, obviously we do support this. It could be weakness, but this also could be, you know, we've had this meeting despite all the...
Let's not create drama
around
it.
All the pressure the administration was under due to Afghanistan. You know, the president gave us his time. Had such a cordial and friendly reception. Let's not pretend that we... got some incredible thing. I'll just say it was a good meeting, which it was.
Let's give them the flattering interpretation.
It could well be, and I certainly agree with you. If this had been happened in a Netanyahu meeting with the American president, then we'd be hearing no end of it. But you know, I think also Bennett understands that he's not the same kind of prime minister that Netanyahu was. Doesn't need to be. And he was quite humble there. You know, he made the point about talking to Biden about his father, who had come from America and just passed away 6 years on that day, and about how he, as a young entrepreneur in New York, had gone
on the Amtrak.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, Biden loved that for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. He had his staff, or whether it was him or his staff, had chosen the right anecdotes.
That was a smart move.
Mm. But is there any significance in Defense Minister Benny Gantz meeting on Sunday with Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah, the first meeting between a senior Israeli official and the Palestinian leader since 2010?
The first meeting with the last Palestinian, according to Amir, the title of Amir's book.
Before we came into the studio, I was just asking Anshul if he has anything to write about this. So now let's see what he has to say about it. And then I can hound him with the article.
You're the Abu Mazen expert.
Well, maybe let me give you an opening line, maybe. Is this the start of the Bennett-Lapid government's efforts to forge economic peace with the Palestinians at the expense of political peace?
Let's notice who was at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Two has-beens.
Mm-hmm.
Benny
Gantz
is a defense minister, important person. Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen,
the almost prime minister,
is the president of the Palestinian Authority. But both of them are not exactly at the center of things. You know, they're there's a saying in Hebrew there, their future's already behind them. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it's certainly true about Abbas, probably also true about Benny Gantz, but at this point. But Gantz is still an important player in the government. He's leader of the second largest party in the coalition. He's defense minister. Every photograph we see of him in the last few weeks shows him sitting at the government front bench in the Knesset with not a very happy face. So I think there is a will also of Lapid and Bennett to give him some space for his own diplomatic initiatives. And they're both happy not to be the ones meeting Abbas. So, you know, it's all about domestic politics as much as it is about the very important things I imagine Gantz did have to discuss with him. You know, Gantz, at the end of the day, is in charge of security coordination with the Palestinians. So it's something which is close to both his heart and to Abbas. You know, Abbas would not be a day in his residence in Ramallah if it wasn't for that cooperation. And I think beyond that, it's interesting because this happened publicly and because it was a high-level minister. I think it's the first time in 11 years there's been an open high-level meeting with Abbas. But it's still more of the routine maintenance. It's not as if there isn't the whole time coordination and conversations at various levels, including at the high levels between Israeli and Palestinian Authority officials.
And also, you know, politically, it's interesting on the Palestinian side as well, for several reasons. First of all, the previous governments in Israel, the Netanyahu governments, were criticized for giving preference to Hamas over Abbas, basically having all these channels of communication with Hamas through the Egyptians and the Qataris and Turkey at some points. And now you have a senior Israeli minister, and I agree with Anshel's assessment of Gantz's current political standing, but still, in name, he is a defense minister, and I think all of his coalition partners try to respect him because they realize he's the weak link in this coalition, so everybody wants to keep him happy. And it does mean something that suddenly he's meeting Abbas, and there is this sense of a new approach, and that this Israeli government will work with the Palestinian Authority openly and try to show that it is the partner. But Bennett's office quickly put out a statement saying there is never going to be political negotiations with the Palestinian Authority, which I think is, if we talked just 2 minutes ago about not putting out statements that serve you politically but could harm the relationship with the United States, what they did here, they put out a statement that helps them politically maybe with the right-wing base in Israel, but is very disrespectful of the Palestinian president who just hosted the Israeli defense minister in his office. I think that was unnecessary. They could have said they discussed security issues and they did not discuss political negotiations. That would have been enough.
The week Bennett Media Shop, they've just come back. They're still sort of got a mini jet lag.
It looks hysterical.
Also, the way they put it out, as a source close to the prime minister, the way they kind of put out 7 in the morning, it wasn't a good move.
And to say there will never be talks is very humiliating to Abbas. Mm-hmm. This is exactly something that serves his political enemies.
Case, it's probably true.
It's probably true, but why do you have to step on the guy? He just hosted Benny Gantz.
I agree. It was a hasty, badly thought out move, and especially coming after a few days in which, you know, the Bennett team did work very well with and handled the meeting, both the preparation and the aftermath in Washington, quite well. So,
Or maybe they only put it out in Hebrew and assumed that nobody would bother translating it. So, listen, Bennett.
It's a bank holiday morning.
This is true. Well, only in the UK.
And they know that we at Haaretz.com will take care of that.
So, Bennett's back. He's flown back into quite an omni-shambles of his own. The COVID new school year, start of the battle over the budget. He's going to have his hands full over the next few weeks, right?
Well, he's going to be, you know, he had his moment in the sun in the White House private dining room having coffee and biscuits. That was his, so for the peak of his, probably his life in many ways.
Why you become prime minister.
Yeah, you know, that was in many ways, certainly a peak for him, a rite of passage. Now he has the blessing, the papal blessing of the the president of the superpower, and now he has to be prime minister.
Will that help him on a practical domestic level?
If it's true that he doesn't have to worry that much about international stuff right now, because the Iranian issue is not moving anywhere, and there's no pressure on him to move towards the Palestinians, it means at least he can concentrate on domestic affairs. Will it help in domestic affairs? No, You know, he's going from Biden to teacher union boss Yaffa Ben David, and anybody who knows anything about teachers unions anywhere, but especially in Israel, will know what a difference that's going to be. You know, that's a very
easier to deal with, very hard landing.
Mm. And also within his coalition, one of the most difficult ministers to deal with is education minister Yifat Shasha Biton, who's shown that she's capable of opposing government policies. And due to the political makeup of this government, Bennett has very little power over her, even though he's the prime minister. So these are going to be some difficult days. You know, we're recording 2 days before the school year reopens. But these are going to be difficult everywhere. Any place now dealing with the Delta variant and reopening schools, it's not just an Israeli problem. We've already been for a year and a half now since the early months of 2020 in this limbo when it comes to schools. Mm. There's no policy. Nobody's really come up anywhere in the world with a good policy of how to continue education and at the same time during a pandemic. I think the budget actually is not that much of a problem anymore. I think the government probably has this handled. Yeah, there will be some changes between the first and second and third readings, and because the coalition is still pretty small, it'll have to really keep an iron grip on it, on its members. But I'd say the balance is looking that, 2.5 months ago, a new government came in. It all seemed so unbelievable, so precarious. How could this eight-party, mm-hmm. diverse coalition stick together? The budget is there. They know exactly what the disagreements are about. There'll be some compromises within the coalition, and I think that they'll pass it by the end of November. It looks like it's not going to be easy. It's going to be a few tense nights in the Knesset, but it kind of looks like this government is now on an upward trajectory. Mm. And let's not forget, they have they're at the height of this fourth wave of COVID. It's not great, but they're handling things. Things haven't gone out of hand. Mm. The third vaccine seems to be working. Yes, there'll be some chaotic days reopening the school year. That's only to be expected. But then there'll be Rosh Hashanah, and people will get back. There's no lockdown. So far, doesn't seem to need to be a lockdown, which is a huge achievement, yes. I think, for Bennett. And if at this point next month, the current a trajectory of the serious illnesses goes down, and it seems to be on the way to going down with the uptake of the third jab. He's passed the first 100 days of his term as prime minister with all the circumstances, mm-hmm. in the pandemic, relatively well.
Two quick points. First of all, Anshel mentioned Yifat Shasha Biton. I encourage the listeners to search for a great story about her that our Elison Kaplan Sommer wrote about a month ago. The Israeli education minister that is beloved by Israel's COVID deniers, which will explain a lot. Second, on the last point that Anshel made, and this is continuing some conversations we've had outside of the studio, I really think that if Bennett manages to get over this wave without a lockdown, the contrast between him and Netanyahu will be so strong, mm-hmm. that this will be his first major achievement that he will be able to also benefit from politically. If we manage to get over this without destroying the economy, like the previous lockdowns had done, especially the first and the second, and I'm not necessarily criticizing Netanyahu's decision to go for lockdowns, because we were in a different situation back then. The vaccine was not available yet. Mm-hmm. COVID was new and scary. We didn't exactly understand what it is. But still, the damage that it caused to the economy was severe. If he manages to get over this wave without doing that, mm. I think even his harshest critics will have to admit that this is an important achievement for him and for the government and the country at large.
His harshest critics probably won't admit that, but the less harsh ones.
We'll give them an opportunity.
Guys, I'm afraid we're out of time for today. Thank you, Amir.
Thank you, Simon. Pleasure.
Thank you, Anshel.
Thank you.
Thanks to our producer, Aaron Ehrlich. Listener, we're taking a couple of weeks off for Rosh Hashanah, but we'll be back in the week beginning September the 13th with more episodes of Haaretz Weekly and Haaretz Weekend. Until then, Shana Tova from Tel Aviv.
Shana Tova.